The Story King Podcast with Giancarlo Ghedini, a show about people and their stories. Today's episode is about adoption.
Colin Fagan, welcome to the Story King Podcast.
Glad to be here.
For the listeners, why don't you just give us a quick bio? I know you're an ordained minister. Just talk a little bit about that.
I'm an ordained deacon. I was ordained in the Anglican Church, and I am currently in a group called the Community. It's going to drop right out of my brain. The Community of Evangelical Episcopal Churches, the CEEE, the CEEC for short. A mouthful.
That would drop out of my brain for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been with them now, I think about 2 years. I was formally accepted this past August. And so that's been a lovely transition. And when I'm not sort of doing deacon things, I'm a full-time stay-at-home dad and a homeschooling dad at that. And so I've been doing that now for the last couple of years. And on the side, as if I needed more to do, I've been doing some writing and thinking on issues around adoption and stuff of that nature. So those three things, being a deacon, being a stay-at-home dad, and sort of writing and reflecting on adoption, I think would, those three kind of consume most of my life at this point.
Right. And I could definitely relate with the stay-at-home, homeschooling,
father,
and writing. I mean, that's I'm in the same boat as that. And, you know, when I first met you and we started talking about adoption, and I thought your story was fascinating, and it also sounded very similar to other things that I heard from people who were adopted. And I was like, oh, cool. They're kind of having similar experiences. So I kind of want to get into that. So
Let's do it.
Why don't you first tell us when you learned you were adopted? Because you didn't like grow up knowing this. You found out at a certain age.
Right,
so talk
right.
about that.
Yeah. So I found out in a bit of a serendipitous way. I was in the sixth grade. So that's going to be like, let's say 12, 13, maybe around there. And I was sitting at this little breakfast area that we had, and I saw my birth certificate. And my birth certificate and my brother's birth certificate were out, and I was looking at mine, and the place of birth, was Dublin, Georgia. And I was like, okay, that's new to me. I don't remember being told that I was born in Dublin, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And so through some inquiry, basically learned that I was adopted. Now, initially, when I first asked, my parents were like, that's a typo. And then they came back later and they basically were like, listen, here's the deal. It's not a typo. You're adopted. And my brother is not adopted, so he was biological. So his place of birth was Atlanta, Georgia. And so that sort of, at that point, at least put it on the horizon that I was adopted. But in the early 80s, I guess this would have been sort of late 80s, early 90s, but really between the 70s, 80s, 90s, there really wasn't a lot of consideration into what that all meant for adoptees. And so for my parents, my adoptive parents, you know, there wasn't sort of a guide of like, yeah, here's how you can introduce your kids to being that they're an adoptee and how to help them navigate all of that. So it really, for most of my formative years, it was in the background, and people every so often would ask, you know, do I have interest in looking for my biological parents, you know, and stuff like that. But for most of the formative years, I really had no interest. It was in the background. But I can't say that I gave it a lot of intentional consideration up until I became a parent. And then that took a pretty significant turn. But that's a pretty large span of time to where it's there, but I was never really giving it, I would say, the consideration that it was due.
So you were 13 around?
Around 13. I think that's about right. Yep.
So when you found this information out, was there any kind of, what kind of emotion came with that? Was it heartbreaking? Yeah. Were you angry? Were you kind of indifferent because you were 13?
So. Yeah, it's a good question. I would say there was certainly confusion because it was like, what does all this mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think in general, because I was 13, there was a lot of indifference. And it wouldn't be, in sort of full disclosure, there were realities about being an adoptee that I was processing, but I didn't know that those realities had to do with being an adoptee. And we can explore what that means at some point. For the most part, I just didn't know. I didn't have a way into what it all meant. So what that left me with was a bit of indifference. The only point that I can remember where indifference moved to like some real significant fear was a couple of years after I found out. I want to say I must have still been in middle school. That could be wrong. But I vividly remember there being in the state of Georgia, there was a legal case that was going on. And I'll have to go back and actually see if I can find what the name of this case was. But it was surrounded, I believe it was a young lady who had been adopted or was in an adoption situation, and the biological parentage now wanted the child back. And the child had been with the adopted family, I think, from pretty young. So it was very well the case that this child had been with the adopted family for most of, let's say it was a young lady, most of her life, and now is in a precarious situation where the biological parents are like, you know what, and I can't remember if it was mom or dad or kind of how that was playing out. But basically, they wanted their daughter back.
Hmm.
And I just remember hearing this on the news and looking at my mom going, could that happen to me? And for reasons that I now understand why it could not have happened in my situation. But my mom very much was like, listen, like, no, that's not going to be your situation. But I remember there being like a profound dread of, you know, one day I could, you know, someone could show up and basically say, hey, we're going to take you from here now and we're moving you over here. So we're taking you from this family, the only family that you've known. And now we're going to, you know, put you with a family that you haven't known, even though the family you haven't known is your biological family. And so it raised a lot of issues for me, deep kind of emotive issues that I slowly had to kind of unpack. And again, not really having a lot of language for what the adoptee experience was like, I just didn't know where to place all of that. So I just was carrying all of that stuff internally, slowly trying to kind of make amends with, for example, this situation and going, okay, that's probably not my situation, but boy, this really freaks me out that here's another adoptee who is being taken from their adoptive family and returned to the biological parentage. That was tough. I mean, that was a moment of real turmoil for me.
So it basically messed with your sense of security.
100%. 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Wow. Now, did you ever find out why your parents, your adopted parents, adopted you in the first place? Like, did they want to adopt or like?
They did. They did. Yes. And it was, so there are different adoption processes. You know, some, I think this is probably more common today where they, you know, families will connect with an adoption agency and then they'll work through the agency. My particular case, it was more just via legal means. It was actually through friends of friends, this sort of thing. So it was kept very private. No agency was involved. Only lawyers ended up negotiating everything on behalf of the families, which I've heard that there are situations similar to mine as well. So my parents never had to go through an agency. They still wanted to adopt. And it just so happened that through their network of connections and friends, it was brought to their attention that there was a family who was looking to adopt, you know, looking to, for the lack of a better word, give up a child for adoption. So through their network, that's how the connection was made.
I got you. And why did being a parent make you want to seek out your biological history?
Yeah.
What sparked you know, that great curiosity.
Question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great question. Giancarlo, I know you're aware we have two kids, a daughter and a son. When our daughter was born, she ended up having to spend 7 days in the NICU here at Vanderbilt. She was born, and within a few hours of being born, she was having seizures. And through the process of trying to discover why she was having seizures, doctors start asking questions about family medical history. And, you know, my wife was able to kind of give a pretty good, like, yeah, here's what I know from my family medical history. But she could say, let me get my mom on the phone, who's a nurse who has really tracked this, and I can get more details. When the doctors are looking at me, I'm going, you know what? I don't have any access to my actual family medical history, because it would be different than my adoptive medical history, because genetically and biologically, I don't come from them. So whatever genetic and biological predispositions they have, I didn't inherit those. I would have inherited the genetic and biological predispositions from my biological parentage. All of that documentation I don't have access to. Now, luckily today, there's been a number of laws that have changed that have at least allowed adoptees to gain access to that information. Mm-hmm. But at the time in which I was adopted, that was a no-go. So I had no access to that. So that for me was the beginning of recognizing that being an adoptee it was no longer about me, but now it had implications for the health of my child.
Right.
And as we're in a discovery process of trying to figure out, okay, where did these seizures come from? And through that process, we also learned that she had a brain injury, none of which looks to have been related to anything genetic, but the due diligence of the medical community certainly saying we need to ask these questions. Because of that journey, that opened me up to the reality of, okay, this reality of my being an adoptee and certain lingering questions that come with that, now it has implications beyond just me. And so I wouldn't say kind of the, how would I say that? That to me was really a beginning where I started to give serious thought onto whether or not I should begin to seek out some of those answers.
Yeah, I mean,
wasn't certain, but it definitely was, that door is now open and I need to give this some serious weight.
Yeah, I mean, that's super practical, that reason, you know, and I don't think people really think about that, you know, the access to medical history from your biological family is like super important. You know, do certain genes run in your family, certain 100%. Cancers,
100%.
This and that. I mean, that 100%. Should be, you would think like there should be some type of database that when the person is old enough, they can access.
Agreed.
That. Are you saying that does exist now?
Within certain states, it's a state by state basis. And you are starting to see a number of states passing legislation that at some point within the adoption process, they are allowing medical history to be included in the file, or they're allowing permission for medical history to be shared in some capacity. So it's on a state-by-state basis. And it's been a few years since I've actually looked to update myself on which states tend to be really open to that. There are still a number of states, last that I checked, that still are closed to that sharing, but the trend is much more in the direction of saying we need to make sure that adoptees and adoptive families have access to this information, because it's not just adult adoptees, but let's say you adopt a child not knowing that they might have preconditions for different things, and then all of a sudden different medical stuff starts popping. I think it does adoptive families also a disservice if they don't even have access to that information.
Right.
And so you are seeing now a real concerted effort to amend what has been longstanding policy of adoptions being confidential and private, which meant no medical history, would have been shared, along with obviously the information of the biological parents and all of that. So there are that is slowly making a turn, to my mind, in a good direction.
Yeah, sure. Now, I know you told me that you actually met your biological family. You have siblings, biological siblings.
I do.
Did that make you feel like a, you know, part of your life puzzle was complete, or did they feel more like strangers?
That's a really good question. How can I answer it? So I'll answer it in a few different ways. When I started to actually really take some time to reflect on being an adoptee, there was a lot of initial grief that was involved in that. Grief that I didn't even realize that I was carrying. And by the time I ended up, so I started doing this process, this work, really doing some reading and study on being an adoptee and everything that comes with that. And I'm probably a good year into it before I meet them. And when I meet them and I begin to kind of learn their story, so I should say that my biological parents, though they were sort of high school sweethearts, they were basically teenagers when they got pregnant with me. They ended up getting married about seven years after I was born. So when I meet them, I meet both of them because they're married. And when they begin to share the story of why I was put up for adoption and sort of everything that was surrounding that, there was another round of grief that I had to go through in order to begin to create space within myself to accept the dynamics of learning a bit of the history of how I came into the earth and essentially how my biological parents were treated by their respective families.
And Colin, just to stop you real quick, because you mentioned grief twice. So what is the grief about?
That's a good question. So I think, I don't want to get too far afield, but embedded within the practices of adoption, especially when we're looking at infant adoption, we are separating a baby from mom. And what science and doctors and neurologists have helped us to understand, basically just let's say in the last 20 years, is that the intimate tether between baby and mom, it's really interwoven and it's very fragile. And what I mean by being interwoven is you will sometimes hear doctors talk about a fourth trimester where, you know, we sort of think in terms of the three trimesters of the baby in utero. And then when they come out, you know, that those trimesters are done. But because of ongoing research and work within the life of fetal development, doctors have now said, you know, there's a fourth trimester where the bond between mom and baby continues even after the baby is out of mom. And that the understanding, the self-awareness that the baby has is intimately tied still to mom. And that we don't really begin to see a baby start to have an awareness of itself separate from mom until much later. Well, our adoption practices, they sever that bond within days of an infant being outside of mom. And we've never fully grappled with the formative impact that that has. And there's one doctor who framed it this way: the baby experiences that, but they cannot verbalize the experience, but they experience it and it's stored in the brain and body. And so the adoptee goes about their life having this wrenching experience stored within them, and that is haunting them, but they may not know where that's coming from, because there's no, it's a pre sort of pre-linguistic experience. So there's no way to kind of put language to it, but it's there. It's in their body. It's in their brain. And so how I experienced awakening to that reality is as grief, as tears. So when I shared that I experienced this initially as grief, I think the grief is grieving that loss, that initial bond that I had with my mom, my biological mom, that was severed when I was, I want to say it was about 72 hours. So you have that tether, that intimate tether, which is so important for human flourishing, that gets cut.
Okay, that's super fascinating. So we're going to touch upon that in a second. Okay. You can go back to the meeting the biological family now, so, but that was a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be. So that's really fascinating. So, all right.
But
so
that's where the grief, so that's where the grief sort of comes from. So when I meet them, I learned their story. So there's sort of another round of grieving. And yet, as I am willing to kind of process through that, as I learn more about them, as I meet their kids, there is certainly some very positive connection that I'm able to make. There are certain gifts and skills that I was never able to place with my adoptive family. Now they have a place. Even my physical appearance, I look like my biological family. Even my wife commented when we first met them and we had brunch together, and it was my biological parents and their kids, and we're all together. And even Gretchen made the comment as we were driving home from that. She goes, "You look like them." I even had Giancarlo, I know you're aware, my dad recently passed away. And when I was at his funeral, I was chatting with someone who was a former colleague of my dad's. And this individual was saying, "I can't," and this is almost verbatim how this person said it. They said, "I can't place who you look like because you don't look like your dad." And they said, "You must look like your mom." Now, I could have said, "Well, I don't look like either of them very well because I'm adopted. So it makes sense that I wouldn't sort of genetically look." But of course, it's like, yes, okay, that's, you know, I just stay quiet. I'm like, yeah, I got it from, I look more like my mom. But again, to be able to place myself somewhere and to know, hey, this is where I came from. And what I look like, the skills and the temperament and some of these odd quirks that I've never been able to place, oh, that I can place them over here. That does provide a meaning that I have found to be terribly important because it at least is affirming I came from somewhere. And these things that I've brought with me from that place, I can anchor them. They're not just ancillary or odd features of my life that were never able to fit within my adoptive context. I can point and say, no, I brought them from my biological world over into this adoptive world. And for the longest time, as I was trying to wrestle with how I place some of those things, now I can place them, and I'm much more sort of comfortable with that odd dynamic of, yeah, they came from over here, but I've had to flesh them out over here.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, and that was my initial question. So it did provide something and a significant piece of the puzzle of your life to, awesome. Now, did you find when you met them, this is just a curiosity question, like, were there any like stylistic or mannerisms that, I'm trying to figure out nature versus nurture. Was there anything, you know, or was it, did they look like you, but, you know, they acted very different? Or did you find that, oh, I do that too, you know, something?
Yeah, it wasn't my initial meeting with them, but I have tried to connect with them every time I'm down. So they still live down in and around the Atlanta area. So whenever I'm down visiting my family, my adoptive family, I try to connect with them. And I remember connecting with them, having brunch with them. And this was just me. And I had that experience that time around where there were just preferences, ways of interacting that I remember myself commenting, man, I'm just like this. Like this is very much how I interact. So that the nature dynamic is very much there. And yet at the same time, there are certainly sort of habits of heart and mind that I received from my adoptive family that I can point out as well. So I think it's an odd mix that I'm still discovering. And the more that I spend time with my biological family, my hunch is I'll have more of those moments of going, okay, here's another little point of something I've received just via nature from them that I can now place over here.
Right. Going back to what you called pre-linguistic grief, we're talking about a form of trauma, basically. Yes. Now, I remember you said something like you always felt like you didn't belong or that there was something missing growing up. And I've heard that from other people I know who were adopted and, you know, and then learned later in life that they were adopted. So can you talk about that for a little bit? Like that sense of like there's something off. I know you learned pretty young, 13 years old. I would imagine if they weren't open about it, that's probably a similar age to other adopted parents. Although I know people who didn't learn until their 30s and stuff like that. So, yeah. So if you could just talk about that for a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's one particular psychologist who I've spent some time with who his entire practice is working with adoptees. And he talks about this sense of not belonging. He coined this phrase, and I don't know if he coined it, but it's almost like a shadow self is sort of how he talks about it, to where there is a sense that something is missing. So it's not even that we just don't belong. It's that we're missing something. Something is gone, and we're not completely sure what that is. And I can't remember verbatim how he described it, but I remember reading it and just going, that is exactly how I felt growing up. So it isn't just a sense of I don't belong here, but it's that with a sense of something is missing, but I'm not certain what that is. And it almost turns into like a sense of being haunted by that lack. And so because of that, for me, there was profound inner turmoil because I'm trying to wrestle with why is it that I'm haunted by this almost suspicion that not only do I not belong here, but something's missing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what it is and where to go to find it. And, you know, unfortunately, and this is not a fault of my adoptive parents by any means, but even to inquire was to be met with a sense of, we don't really know where to go to get you those answers either. So at every turn, there was really no avenue of exploration other than to have to negotiate. I'm having this deep, and I recognize that there are people who within their own biological families probably feel like they don't belong there. And I don't want to minimize those experiences because I think all of us wrestle at times with feeling a bit dissonant with our families.
Part of the human experience.
Part of the human experience, no doubt about it. That's one of the reasons why I want to add that second feature to it, that it isn't just a sense of wrestling with the place in the family, but that there's this haunting suspicion of something is missing, but I don't know where to go to find that. And it's that piece that I think within the conversation about adoption, we've spent little to no time really addressing at all, that there would be this shadow self, to use Dr. Needham's language, that we're trying to understand while at the same time trying to ground ourselves and make sense of our life in an adoptive context. And those two things are sort of battling within us, where we're trying to be at home where we are and make sense of our life there, while at the same time having this haunting suspicion of something's missing here, and I don't know how to fill in that space.
That's a good way to distinguish it, to distinguish that, because when we've heard it too about like, oh, from other adopted people saying, you know, I always felt like I didn't belong or whatever, you know, my wife and I would say like, you know, we always felt like that too, you know,
sure.
But there must be something deeper. So the fact that you're saying that it's more than that, it's that something's missing, that's kind of, you know, and it's unnamed. That's the other part. Like it's deep. It's like deep, almost to the soul, you know?
Yes.
And did you feel like the secrecy of it at all? Or did there feel like there was a secret going on?
At times before I found out, I had questions, I think would be the best way to describe it. And just to sort of frame what I mean by that, I can recall a story. This would have been not too long before I found out, but I remember overhearing my parents share the birth story of my brother, who was biological. And I remember, so I was in the room, I shouldn't say that, you know, saying over here, it means I was in a separate room. We were all around the dinner table, and the birth story of my brother was being shared. And I remember asking, well, what about my birth story? And I remember there being a pause, and I can't remember the exact answer, but I knew in my gut, something's missing. Like it just didn't have the same detail. It didn't have the same, there's not a great word, but it wasn't like a story.
Right.
And on an instinctual level, I was like, that's weird. Like there's a lot of detail, a lot of vibrancy to this birth story. Nothing, very little of that when I inquire about my own. And so that left me with a sense of what's happening here.
Right.
And so it wasn't very long after that that I ended up finding out, oh, well, you are adopted. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, then of course, my adoptive mom wouldn't have a birth story.
Right.
And I want to say, and you didn't ask this specific question, but I just want to add it, at the risk of sounding like I'm criticizing my adoptive family, which I'm not. I want to say, up until very recently, the sort of prevailing wisdom that adoptive families were told was if you love your adoptee well, it shouldn't matter that they have this feature of their lives, that they were removed from a family to be placed with you. That love will cover that. And because that was the sort of the prevailing wisdom, a lot of adoptive families were never given any sense of like, hey, here is how you can broach this subject with your adoptee. And here is how you can do it in a way that is age appropriate and maybe gradual over time, that as they get older, you share more. None of that was sort of a part of how my parents, adoptive parents, were introduced to adoption. So I think when I'm asking my adoptive mom this question, she's sort of like, oh, crap. I don't know what to do here, because the prevailing wisdom was just love them well and this won't be an issue. And we've only very recently, just within the last 2 to 3 decades, have recognized that prevailing wisdom was just not correct.
Right. And there are a lot of important things that now they're discovering, which leads me to the next question.
Yeah.
Have there been studies linking behavioral issues to adopted kids? Do they struggle more with the addictions late in, you know, teens and older years? Are there any kind of studies?
There are some. Some of that field is still growing. And in many cases, the studies find that there's not a dramatic, when it comes to, you know, learning issues and addictive issues and things of that nature, you don't necessarily see a higher incident of adoptees in those spaces. What we do find is just a higher incident of adoptees in therapy and counseling in general.
Hmm.
So they may not be wrestling with some of the more pronounced behavioral dynamics, but we are finding them in higher numbers showing up in our counseling and therapy work. And I think that's due, and you had used this language earlier, and I think it's the right language with which we need to understand adoption, that there are dynamics of the soul that are at work here. And, you know, to my mind, adoptees are incredibly resilient because they are having to navigate all of these dynamics. And many of them go on to be very successful, loving parents and husbands, and yet still trying to work out these dynamics within themselves. And because it's sort of a deeper issue of the soul, if you will, that's one of the reasons we find them, to my mind, this is just my opinion, one of the reasons we find them in therapy and counseling, because I think they're trying to heal that dynamic within themselves or find some sort of restorative dynamic there. And at this point, you know, the therapy and counseling world tends to be a place that we gravitate toward for that.
Hmm. And what would you say to the parents of an adopted child struggling about when or if to tell their child they were adopted? You know, now that you're on the other end of it, sure. Do you have any strong opinions on when it's right to do that?
I don't have a strong opinion on when, because I think each family is obviously each family is different. What I do think is, and I sort of share this both as an adoptee, but as someone who, you know, as a ordained minister, who is sort of brought into these pastoral situations. And I say ordained minister in a tongue-in-cheek way, because I try to carry that both in a humble, I try to carry that humbly. What I would hope is that adoptive families cultivate a community of people who can help them discern these kinds of times. And I don't think it should just be one time. I think there are age-appropriate moments throughout the life of the adoptee and the adoptive family that having these conversations needs to happen. So, you know, one sort of rough time frame that I've heard, that I've read, is between 6 and 8. And usually that has to do with the development of the brain and just the body of the young person, where they're becoming more aware, they're awakening to their world in new ways in that 6 to 8 year span. So that can be a good time to have some initial conversation around their being an adoptee. And then revisiting it in those teen years where there is a real dramatic brain body development that is happening. And you're starting now to have deep sort of existential questions that the teenager is starting to wrestle with. That can be another time to have those conversations. But I honestly think you can have them during those periods of time, but then let it be an open, ongoing conversation that even into adulthood, the door is always open. And there's always an openness to exploration into these dynamics. And I will say that once it was known that I was adopted, sort of once, even though there was a bit of messiness in how it all came about, there was a constant open door with my family at that point of, if you ever want to talk about it, we're here. And even going so far as to say when you are, or if you are ever going to look for your biological parents, we're behind you 100%. You just let us know and we will help you along in that journey as best we can, given the little bit of access of information that we have. So I think there is a community of people who care about the adoptive family and the adoptee, who are close to them, praying for them and with them, can help the community, help the family, excuse me, kind of know and have a sense of now would be a good time. And then, oh, here's another good time. But never leave it just solely on the adoptive family, but really have it as a communal activity that everybody is kind of involved in, helping them discern the pathways forward.
Yeah, and I like the open approach. And, you know, and I would imagine the experience of an adoptee who's of a different race from 100%. The adopted family, there's no secret, you know, so if right. a white family has a black child or vice versa, you know, that child's going to know very quickly from a small age, why do I look different from you guys?
100%.
Right. And
100%.
You know, so if that type of adopted family can have the conversation so early, then obviously anybody can.
100%.
It's just that one they're forced to in that situation. Yes. So that's interesting.
Yes. 100%.
Was there any... Is this part of the trauma or not really? Is there any kind of sense of betrayal when you learn your history and it wasn't upfront, you know? Like, is that part of it or is that too strong of a word?
Betrayal was never kind of my sense of things. Abandonment was initially. Mm. But again, I think... even that strong of a word, the more that I have done the work of just sort of processing, I realize that initially some of our initial language is very strong and it's very on the nose. I mean, to say like, hey, I was abandoned. I mean, people might hear that and be like, hey, that's no, you weren't. It's like some of it is putting language to deep felt experience, but over time, as space is given to that and healing takes place, different language emerges. So I would not say abandoned anymore. So that's my experience. There is no doubt in my mind that adoptees, as they are taking seriously their story of adoption, wouldn't surprise me in the least if some of them, if not many of them, say, you know, betrayal is a way of sort of putting words to how they are experiencing their process of unpacking what it means to be an adoptee. Mm-hmm. Especially if you take into account, you know, international adoptions where, you know, some of the reasons for people internationally being adopted, some of those stories are tragic. And it's not a word like abandonment just may not be strong enough. A word like betrayal would be strong enough, stronger. Mm. So I think we have to be comfortable with a number of very uncomfortable words that we would not normally apply in adoption. Adoptive families don't want to be, they don't want to believe that they are participating in something where a word like betrayal and or abandonment would be a part of it. But the reality is, from the adoptee standpoint, as they begin to do the work of unpacking all of that, those may be words that are very apropos for what they are experiencing. And we've got to be comfortable navigating all of that with them as mm-hmm. they're processing.
Interesting. So it's situational.
100%.
Now, as an ordained minister, has anything happened to your faith or spiritual understanding of things having learned about your adoption?
Sure. Well, in short, absolutely. and all for the positive, it seems to me. Since we are in Advent, you know, something that I've been spending this year, this has been a unique year for me as an adoptee, because I've been spending more time pondering on the reality that Jesus himself is an adoptee. I mean, Joseph has to adopt him. Hmm. He's not Jesus's biological dad. And yet what we find is Joseph saying, okay, we don't give Joseph enough attention in the birth narrative. We give Mary lots of attention, and there's good reason to do that. But when we think about Joseph, he's confronted with a child that he didn't participate in seeing born. And yet he, as the person in the position to be Jesus's father, has to accept that. So Jesus is an adoptee. Joseph is an adoptive father. The more that I sit with that, the more that what I'm able to slowly see my own story and the fracture of my own story as being participated in by Jesus. I can place my story in that grand, beautiful story of what God has been up to in the world. And I've come to realize it's not incidental that two of the most prominent figures throughout the entire scripture, Jesus for the Christian, Moses for our Jewish friends, Moses is also an adoptee. And there's something significant in the experience of the adoptee that seems to be very pertinent for God's work in the world and for how God is participating. And the best way that I've come to sort of grapple with it is adoption fundamentally suggests to us that something on the familial and communal area has gone awry, such that a family is no longer able to sustain their offspring. Can't keep a child, so I have to give my child away. That is no light burden. Mm-hmm. And what we find is that the triune God is saying, I'm going to come in the most intimate fashion, and I'm going to share in that most delicate of fractures. And I'm going to let that mark my life too. And so as I have sort of sat with that this Advent coming to Christmas, I not only find sort of deep healing in that, because it tells me that the second person of the Trinity has some understanding of the deep pain that I have carried. But in that, I see there is hope that it doesn't have to be the end of my own story. That yes, being an adoptee and the formative influence that has had and does have is a part of my life, but it's not the totality. It's just a part. And that there's a horizon of being and becoming human that has been opened to me, and I think all adoptees, because of the way that Jesus has come into the world, that as adoptees, we need to take hold of and we need to live into. So, yeah, I'll stop there and you can ask further questions.
Yeah, no, that was a beautiful way to put it. So awesome. I actually only have one other question, and it has nothing to do with adoption. So you have to put on your creative hat if you're ready.
Boom, let's do it. Let's do it. Right. I'm ready.
I ask every single guest this question because I just think the answers are revealing and it's just fun to me. If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh my gosh, any superpower. I think I would like to fly. And I would like to, quite honestly, merely because I think it would be terribly exciting, one, to be able to fly wherever I wanted to, whenever I wanted to, but also I think it'd be neat to be able to observe our surroundings from up high. So That would probably be my answer.
It's a great answer. It's one of my choices all the time too.
Yes.
I always wonder if it's something like if we're obsessed with freedom or something, you know, those
Has
of us who want
to
fly.
Has to be. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Colin Fagan, thank you so much for coming on the Story King podcast. I learned quite a bit about adoption today and different aspects of it that I've never heard articulated the way you did today. And I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Giancarlo, for having me. I really appreciate it as well.
Thank you for listening to the Story King podcast. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at storyking.podcast or facebook.com/storykingpodcast. We're also on TikTok and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and leave a positive review on the platform of your choice and share with your friends and family. To further support the show, consider becoming a patron for as low as $1 per month and gain access to exclusive content on patreon.com/TheStoryKing. You can purchase the literary works of Giancarlo Gadini on Amazon.com. All of these links will be in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to the Story King podcast, a show about people and their stories. Please join us next time. Until then.